Sam Carpenter here, and I have Perry Marshall online to talk. And he is, and those of you who don't know, he's a very special guy. He's an entrepreneur. He's a pay-per-click advertising specialist, probably the best in the world at that. He's a marketing strategist. He's an author. His most recent book is 80-20 Sales and Marketing, The Definitive Guide to Working Less and Making More. Perry, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you. It's good to be here today.
That sounds familiar. I'm all for working less and making more, too. And Perry, you've written The Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising, The Guide to Google AdWords, Definitive Guide to Google AdWords, and then way back, boy, this sounds like heavy stuff, Industrial Ethernet, Industrial Ethernet, a pocket guide, and the second edition. Oh, my God. So, anyway, what I see in common, and we've gone back and forth a few times, and you interviewed me at least once, I believe, and we both have electrical backgrounds. You have a degree in electrical engineering, and I was kind of worked my way up project engineer for an electrical utility. So that's pretty cool, and we both have that background in engineering. And I don't know what that means because, you know, as an author, don't we hate those one-star reviews we get on Amazon? And, I got one the other day, and he says, well, I'm giving this book, my book is Work the System, The Simple Mechanics of Making More and Working Less, in his third edition. And he gave me a one-star, and his very brief summary was, I'm giving it a one-star rating because I'm an engineer, and I know about these things.
So
I don't know what it means, but I like to think engineering in what we do, what you and I do, fits and is a good background. And Perry, you read my book, and my book is about systemizing and processes, and we have a lot in common in how we approach things. And what I'd like to do, and this is such a privilege, I so appreciate you doing this, what I'd like to do is just start this up. And I think we'll probably have a stream of consciousness thing going on, and we'll see where it goes. How does that sound?
That sounds excellent. Looking forward to it.
Okay, so one thing I noted in one of your most recent newsletters was that a lot of people are out there gathering information either online or listening to an audio like this, and there's so much coming in that they don't apply any of it. And I've got this right from the beginning. My book's been out for 6 years, and it's like, okay, I get this. I know it'll work, but I can't get to it or anything else. I can't get to anything. There's all this good information. And so I'd like to hear you expound on this. And this, let me read this quote from your newsletter. A lot of people feel guilty because they're reading all these newsletters and getting all these ideas and implementing almost none of them. So could you take off on that, and we'll go back and forth a little bit?
Yeah, I think there are two completely different kinds of people that we need to speak to. There is one kind of person who is, let's just call them an information junkie, and maybe they're stuck in paralysis of analysis, or they're actually really terrified to find out whether their idea is going to work or not, or they're getting ready to get ready to get ready, and maybe they're afraid to take some big leap. And that is one kind of a person, and that person definitely exists out there. And I think that person tends to be more like the business opportunity seeker, and you know, there's a million of those. And you know, a lot of us who even own businesses or have good careers are still, we're still an opportunity seeker in some other little corner of the world. Like maybe we own a real business, but we're an opportunity seeker as a guitar player, right?
Like, right.
Well, you know, I haven't gotten around to practicing yet, you know, but one of these days. So there's that person, okay? But then the other person is the person that is truly up to their eyeballs in it, and they are doing it, and they have a business and all of this other stuff. And what very often people – I think a lot of people are very susceptible to guilt in figuring in feeling as though they're supposed to have like some high efficiency factor that they can assign as a ratio between all the things they've heard and all the stuff that they're actually doing. And of course that's very well intentioned. But what I've started to notice, especially in the last couple of years, is how many business people, career people, whatever, are really, truth be told, when you get right down to it, they are addicted to activity. Almost like it might as well be cigarettes or booze. And like they can't live without it, and everything they do generates more activity and more things to respond to. And after a while, you're in the hamster wheel, and it's really all you know. And then you feel guilty because, like, wow, you know, I'm only doing 15% of this. When in actuality, it might be fine if they only do 5% of it. If it's the right 5%, it pays for all of the other stuff, or all the education, or all the seminars, or whatever, for years. And I think a lot of times we have to say no to a whole lot of things, and most of us don't say no to enough.
There's a train of thought that you should say no to everything to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say no to everything and make it prove itself before you take it on. And you know, as far as it's addicted to activity, there's a part in my book, I briefly touch upon it, and I got some reader abuse for this. That we are, as a culture, and this has happened recently, addicted to short-term stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. The texting. Who says, you know, the kids are texting each other hundreds of times a day. How come people in professional businesses are doing that? How come the guy who's running a $25 million corporation, which isn't a big one, but it's big enough, is getting texted by salespeople, when can I meet with you?
Right.
That's crazy. But my point is that our attention spans are so short, and it's not just texting, it's everything. It's TV, it's how business operates, it's how we are. And we spread ourselves so thin, but so does everybody else, and we don't get anywhere with it. And I think what I'm hearing you saying is, say no, find what works, find who's really good at what they do, and latch onto that and focus on that.
Yes. Right? Yes, because you know, 50% of your results are going to come from about 1 or 2% of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the 80-20 rule. And the thing about it, so you know, you were asking the question, you know, well, what's all this engineering stuff worth? And yeah, you know, I did write a book called Industrial Ethernet, and it was, you know, it was skullduggery to write that thing. But I wrote it because there was a positioning opportunity in the industry that I worked in at that time, and it served me very well to spend 6 months grinding that thing out. And it ended up kind of helping me expanding my horizons as well. But when I discovered 80-20, I kind of had this epiphany. It was like, hey, wait a minute, there's a math formula behind this, and I actually had to figure out what it is. And you know, engineers bring a particular orientation, and you know, I've long believed that, you know, if you have one profession or one background or one stream of education, that's all fine and well. But if you go really deep into two, not one, and then you cross-pollinate them together, that's really powerful. In my case, it's really been engineering plus marketing. you know, marketing being defined as, you know, arithmetic and human psychology. So, well, let's take the arithmetic and let's actually go a lot deeper with it. And then, of course, human psychology is as big as Shakespeare and all the literature in the world and all the politicians and everything else. It's endless, right? And so you put those two things together and you really have something. And one of the, and a basic fact of 80-20 is 50% of your results really do come from 1% of what you do. And so, you know, you could spend your whole life like sitting, picking cotton seeds apart, or you could invent a cotton gin, which, you know, maybe that takes a month, maybe it takes a year, maybe it takes a decade, but, you know, for the effort of inventing a cotton gin, you could actually save a million people from having a cotton, you know, having to sit there and do that. And so there really are huge leverage points in life, and everybody has them. And frenetic activity always pulls you in the wrong direction.
I have a basic tenet that feeds right into this, and this goes back to the engineering, and that is that all the results in our lives right now, like I have a white shirt on, it's a casual shirt, I'm sitting in my office, and the lights are on here, and I feel a certain way. All these characteristics or all these experiences I'm experiencing right now, which right now, of course, is all there is. The past is the past. It's over, and the future is conjecture. But all these things in my life, as I sit here, and you back there in the Midwest, and all the people that are listening to this, all their experiences, all their conditions in this moment happened because of a 1-2-3-4-step process that preceded it. I had to put the shirt on this morning. I had to drive down here to the office this afternoon to conduct this interview. So this is basic engineering, and why I connect with other engineers and why I wrote my book is that we need to spend our time in the 1-2-3-4 part, not fishing around with the bad results of unmanaged processes. So we need to manage our processes. And whether it's code writing or marketing or flying an airplane, you have to pay attention to the 1-2-3-4 part. And then one other little illustration here is my little 14-year-old granddaughter's in here training to be in my call center to be a TSR, a telephone service representative. We'll see if she can do it or not. She's got a very high IQ, it turns out. We do IQ testing here. But we have a training program that she's on. It used to take us 6 months to train people, and then we came up with a training program, and they're trained in a day and a half, and they're better than after 6 months of osmosis. So the 1% we're talking about here, the 1% is the hard part. That's the part where you do what you have to do to build a process and a system that will work in the future without you being there. And that's what marketing is in my mind. So what I'm hearing is that a person needs to decide what they're going to do, slow down, take a deep breath, do some reading, do some studying, and set up a process and a system with Google AdWords or whatever the existing business might be and whatever the endeavor is, but spend some time in the preparation rather than the execution, because the execution so much of the time is that other 50%, or, you know, the 50% that doesn't matter, or the 99% that doesn't matter is just, and I love that word, frenetic activity, right?
Yeah. And, you know, 20 years ago, I was really green, and I was trying to learn how to sell and everything. And I remember reading this magazine article, and this guy said, "Massive action solves every problem." You know what? That is such a pile of BS. It's almost frightening. You know, the truth is very few actions solve every problem. And they are well-chosen, you know, laser-focused actions, usually. I mean, yeah, there are situations, they do exist, where you just kind of have to run around and play whack-a-mole, but smart people avoid those. You know, smart people avoid jobs where they're just sitting there picking cotton seeds apart. You know, and so I'm kind of the antithesis of that. And I believe I actually believe that rest and relaxation earns work, not the other way around. So most people are working for the weekend. I think the weekend fuels you and feeds you so that when you start working that you can do the right thing and do it effectively and do it from a place of creativity and resourcefulness rather than a place of, you know, I'm flagellating myself or something.
I love it. I hadn't heard it put quite that way before, but that makes perfect sense. Sometimes the exact opposite tact is what you want.
Yeah.
Another thing in one of some of my reading, and I religiously read your newsletter, Perry. I so enjoy it. You're a great writer. You really are a terrific writer.
Thank you.
But, Perry, I want to talk to you about motivation. And so a lot of people are caught up in frenetic activity.
Yeah.
And a lot of people can't get going. And in my opinion, that frenetic activity wears people out, and that's why they can't get going.
Yes.
Whatever way we want to put that, give me your idea of how a person who's doing frenetic fire killing, mole whacking, can drop that and start to be thoughtful and start to pay attention to what they're actually doing with their time rather than doing this stuff. Does that make sense? Am I asking a question in a proper way?
It sure does. So first of all, you might have to take this on faith for a little while until you can prove it to yourself. But 80-20 is not just a little rule of thumb that happens to apply a lot of times or like a business school proverb. It's a law of nature. It is a law that says cause and effect are always unequal. And so 80-20 says that 80% of your effort comes from 20% of what you do, and the other 20% of, I'm sorry, let me restate this. 80% of your results come from 20% of your effort, and the other 20% of your results come from 80% of your effort. Okay, and so what that means is that you can stop more than half of what you are doing, and the results will only go down by less than 20%. Okay?
Got it.
If you pick the right stuff, if you pick the right stuff to stop, it's not going to impact you very much. But There's an 80-20 inside every 80-20, and so 20% of the 20% of your effort produces 80% of the 80% of your results. And so what that means is that if you have 100 activities on your list and you take effort away from 80 of those things and you put more of it into 20, a few of those are going to start producing exponentially more than they were before, okay? So almost everybody has customers that they are ignoring because the lower value squeaky wheel customers are eating up all of their time and effort, okay? Almost everybody has products that they're busy developing, supporting, whatever. And there's a few, if they just took that off the table and put their effort into a few products that already exist or changing one existing product to fit even better what their very best customers want, you'd get this exponential result. Now, I have this belief, and it's that your procrastination demons, if I might call them that, you know, the inner head trash that that keeps you from doing what you really want to do. I think those things are custom designed to pull you away from that top 20%, the top 5%, the top 1% activity, and you can actually figure out what the top 1% opportunities are by listening to your procrastination demons. So let me give you an example of this. About 10 years ago, my Definitive Guide to Google AdWords book had taken off, and it was selling like hotcakes, and I was like really proud of myself and really happy about this. And my friend Bill came to me and he said, you know, Perry, I think I have a $1 million idea for you. Yeah, I'm dead serious. It's a $1 million idea, but you have to agree that if this really is a $1 million idea and you make $1 million from it, you have to give $10,000 to my favorite charity, which is an inner city school in Philadelphia. And I said, okay. And he sat me down. We're at a bar in a hotel, and he says, you need to add coaching to your business because right now you're just selling these books, and there's a whole bunch of people that are just like me that they're never going to actually go through the book and do all this. They need to have their hand held. They have all these questions. They need somebody to answer them. And if you do this, there's this huge business sitting there waiting for you. And I decided he was right, and I agreed to, you know, if this pans out, I'm gonna give money to your charity. And I got going on it, and I'm telling you, I knew it was a good idea. I knew he was on the money. And every time I would sit down and try working on that thing, I would, like, my procrastination demons would revolt. And it was like, oh, you know, Perry, you got to get a haircut, or, you know, I mean, it was like all these, like, and also I realized, oh my goodness, this is how I know that this project is going to hit a home run. My procrastination demons know. So I'm going to actively defy them. And sure enough, like, Bill got his 10 grand. It ended up being a really huge deal. We created this thing that we call the bobsled run, aka personal AdWords coaching, and we took the whole AdWords thing and we expanded it dramatically into conversion rates and sales funnels and autoresponders and USPs and like the whole package of what you do to make a business work. And so ever since then, I've realized that what most of us do is that we anesthetize ourselves with activity. And we just run in the squirrel cage. And the most natural thing for most of us to do, we wake up in the morning, we sit down at our computer, and we start reacting to stuff. And when you do that, you are solidly in the 80% of activity that only generates 20% of your income. And you will just nurse the addiction and just keep it going along, and you won't accomplish much of anything, and you'll feel good about it. And like, that's where most people's heads are at. And if you can step back and stop what you're doing, and I think you do it with a piece of paper. You get away from the computer and you get that yellow pad of paper, or your notebook or your journal or whatever, and you sit there and you go, okay, so, you know, what is the highest value activity? Most of us have activities. If we really got down to it, they earn us $1,000 an hour, $10,000 an hour while we're doing them, even if it's just for a few minutes. And like, and then there's all these other activities that they're $10 an hour that, you know, we shouldn't be doing them at all. So that's my theory. Go ahead.
I have a story that is completely congruent with what you just said about the meaningless activity. So I talk about it in the book, my book, and I was giving a talk to 60 call center owners in Las Vegas in 2000, and I had just spent 15 years beating my head against the wall, 100-hour work weeks, doing all this stuff. I could do everything. The heroic aspect is here. If you're really busy, you're working 80 hours a week, and everybody sees how busy you are, you feel like the hero, and you're an idiot. You're just an idiot. But anyway, I thought I was just heroic, and I got up in front of these people, and it had just clicked in my head that documentation and strategy with systems is more important than anything else, that spending your time creating processes that work is the best use of my time. There's a $1 million idea for me, right? And so I'm in front of these people, and I've got this whole talk set up with the slides and everything, and I just offhandedly, I didn't mean to, I just thought it would be interesting. How many of you have written procedures for your operation? And a call center operation is incredibly complex. Incredibly complex. Nobody raised their hand. One lady sort of put her hand up, and I asked her later, she's from Canada, and she said she was thinking about it. And so there you go. These people are doing 80 to 100 hours a week, and they have no processes in place to stop the fire killing. And there you have it. It's the same thing. And at that moment in time, it dawned on me, this thing dawned on me, that this was not only just a good idea to work on processes and systems, but nobody does it. Nobody does it. And then we go back to what we first talked about here, Perry, and I think we mentioned it at the beginning, but most of your competition is doomed. I think we were offline when we talked about it, but most of the competition isn't doing any of this stuff, and you have to not worry about it. Just pick out the things that work, and it might be a variety of things that will work in your case, and do those things, and don't get caught up. What does Tony Robbins say? Don't major in minors. And so we talked about motivation, too, and that's where I got really motivated in front of that group. When I realized nobody out there is doing the simple, mundane, somewhat, at least on appearances, boring thing of documenting processes and working on systems. And so I think we get to the same place with this whole topic of where we spend our time and the fact that most people, the huge majority of your competition, is out there flailing around. I like to call it, what did I say in my book? I said something about splashing around, floundering around on the surface, right? Splashing around the surface of the lake rather than taking a deep breath and diving down and find out what the hell's going on down below. You know, what's going on down below that's causing you to be thrashing around on the surface? And so I think we're getting to the same place here. And I love the idea of mathematical forces of nature, well, laws of nature, which you talk about at the beginning. These are numerical facts. And engineers get this, surveyors get it, pilots get it, anybody who's involved with mathematical or processes, deep into processes, understand that we're dealing with how things work on planet Earth. And so you've got to conform to that, and the fact is 1% of your activity is going to make a big difference in your life. It's going to be most of your income, most of those brilliant thoughts once in a while, that you can come up with. So how do you spend your time coming up with more brilliant thoughts? Well, I think you just relax. There's some books out now right now about how easy it is to relax and take a break. The mind is very plastic, and there's a book called The Shallows, and it's a great title because it talks about how frenetic we are, and I'm trying to think of the author's name. The contention is, if you just read a little bit every day in a book, not on a Kindle and not in a newspaper or magazine, but read a book an hour a day, within 2 or 3 days you start to slow down. And now we're back to the rest and recuperation, and that's where the ideas come from. You might think it took you 20 years to get frenetic, but the truth is you can unravel that in just a few days. You can just, reading a book is the solution. So you've got to slow down so the good ideas come, but then you've got to take action, which is what you were talking about, Perry. How do you take action? Well, you've got to have that aha go off in your head enough to motivate you. And that's what you were talking about, right?
Yes. And these deep principles, it's if people could understand that, the universe and the world operates according to a pretty small number of principles, and all the stuff that happens is just these, it's kind of like, in music, there's 12 notes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's 12 yeah. notes. And if you take those 12 notes and you make long ones and short ones, you can make any music you've ever heard in your life, right? And it's the same thing with everything else in life. So if you are aware of these few deep principles that make everything work, and you know what the real leverage points are, then you're operating from this foundation of extreme simplicity. Okay, and all of a sudden it becomes very clear what you should do and what you shouldn't. So I'll give you an example of this. So I realized, probably about 11 or 12 years ago that 80-20 was a law of nature that is absolutely everywhere. You've never once looked out your window and not seen 80-20 in action. Okay, 80% of the sap goes through 20% of the tree branches. 80% of the traffic travels on 20% of the roads, and it goes on and on and on. Well, so I was trying to crack the code on Google AdWords, and I realized, so as an engineer, I understand that I have to match the message, or marketers understand, you have to match the message to the audience, but I've got all these keywords, and every keyword is an audience, and I can't match a million things, so what do? I apply 80-20, and what I started to realize was that 95% of the traffic came from 5% of the keywords. So that meant if I optimized the best 5% of the keywords, I got 95% optimization for 5% of the work. And I created this technique called peel and stick, and pretty much everybody in AdWords today uses it, and it's, I got this keyword, it's not doing too well, so I'm going to peel it out, stick it in a new spot, and write a perfect ad and a perfect landing page for it, and I'm going to make sure people get exactly what they want, and I'm not going to worry about this big, long list of all these trivial keywords that only get 3 searches a month. And all of a sudden, you could optimize in a Google campaign in maybe an hour or a few hours or a day instead of weeks and weeks. This applies to everything. Everything is like this. So this means that this whole frenetic activity thing is totally counterproductive, and because the frenetic activity actually distracts you from the simplicity of how the world works and gets you obsessing about all these things that you're just going to polish turds, then actually your best your best ideas and your best productivity comes from doing things you like. And so you have to disconnect the results from effort. They actually have fairly little to do with each other. And I've had to unlearn basically 30 years of programming in order to really start to get this. Like most of the time when I resolve to redouble my efforts and go at this thing again harder, it's almost 90% of the time it's the wrong impulse. It's like, no, actually, I probably need to stop.
You maybe should have abandoned the idea completely, is what you're saying, and go in another direction?
Yes. Yes. Okay. There was something fundamentally wrong about the whole thing. So what was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it?
Yeah. I love it. So it's like the guy with the dump trucks. He's got 10 trucks and he's losing $20 a load. If he just gets another 10 dump trucks, maybe that'll help things.
Right.
And it won't. It just makes it worse. And, of course, the biggest casualty is your own attention span and your own ability to change the environment, because you only get a few hours a day of really intense creative energy, and you don't want to be frittering it away.
Yeah, and I think what you said about the book, like, okay, if you could just unwind and read a book, well, you know, you probably got to shut off your smartphone, you know, because
yeah.
What happens to me is like, okay, I've been reading for 15 minutes, time for another fix. Well, yeah, you can get one. You can always get that fix. It's there. It's 24/7. You know, unfortunately, some people, they're getting a fix just before they go to sleep at night. They get another one as soon as they wake up in the morning. They just reached for the nightstand or maybe even under their pillow. Oh, here's my phone. You know, dude, you're nursing an addiction. And look, I have an addictive personality. I'm prone to this as much as or more than anybody. I mean, I have a friend who refuses to ever play golf because he knows that he'll become a rabid maniac. He's like, I'm not gonna do it. You know, and so, like, I'm susceptible to that too. So what do you do? Well, you know, putting it on airplane mode, that works really well. It stops everything, right? Inbound, outbound, whatever, right? So you really have a point there.
I love it. Yeah, it goes without saying, if you're going to do this meditative thing, which is completely meditative, you got to turn your phone off.
Yes.
And like in meditation, when your mind wanders, you drag it back. You drag it back to the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, long-term memory, according to this book, The Shallows, is that you compare a bathtub with a thimble, and the way long-term memory works, their long-term memory is the bathtub, and if you want the new information to stick, you have to put it in the bathtub with a thimble a little bit at a time. It's just the bombarding of information, none of it will stick. And so what you have to do is turn off all the other input and read line by line, line after line after line, and then you finally get this information flowing into your brain in a very slow way, and it slows you down. It just slows you down, and you start to get creative, and you start to not want that frenetic activity. But you can't have the phone going off.
Right.
You just can't.
Right.
And it's the same in a conversation. You're having a conversation. Don't pick up the phone and answer the phone and abandon the person who's sitting in front of you. Turn the phone on to airplane or on the vibrator or whatever, and give 100% attention to that person. And do not multitask. Multitasking is the worst thing you can do for your psyche. It makes you crazy. And yes, you can do it mechanically in the car. You can steer while you push on the gas, but these are all subconscious things. But you can't be... I had an attorney recently. I was talking to him. I was asking him a question, and he's in at his desk reading some document. I don't think it was even related to me. And I'm talking to him, asking him a question, and he's nodding like he's listening. And he's not. I don't care how long he's been an attorney or how smart he is. You can't think of two things at one time. And I won't use him again. You cannot multitask. If you want to slow down and you want to stop the frenetic stuff, do not multitask. Well, Perry, this has been awesome. I think we're running out of time. And do you have any tidbits along these lines about motivation and about less frenetic activity or doing the right thing that you can give our listeners before we go?
Well, you know, I do have one, and it's very, very, very big picture, which is, you know, whether you're mindlessly, you know, frittering your time away with frenetic activity, or whether you're intentional, you either way, you at least want to be in the right business and the right opportunity. I think a lot of times people don't stop and figure out, you know, am I even doing something that has potential to really be successful. And You know, one of my mentors for the last couple of years, and really via book for much longer than that, has been Richard Koch. And Richard is, he wrote the original 80-20 book that inspired me a long time ago. And he's worth $250 million, and he works an hour a day. Okay? And I kid you not, he works an hour a day. I've been to visit him twice, you know, and both times we had things that we're going to work on, you know. And, you know, I figured if somebody flies to Spain or Portugal from, you know, from the United States, you're going to spend all day working. No, he works an hour. That's all we're going to do. The rest of the time, we're going to do all this other stuff, ride the bike, work on the book, which to him, that's his recreation, you know, but he refuses, okay? So, you know, if you do the math, a guy who's a fraction of a billionaire working an hour a day, that's a really good hourly rate, okay? Well, the core secret of his investment strategy and his business consulting strategy is called STAR Principle. And STAR Principle says you only go into markets that are growing, and you only invest in companies that are the market leader. And if you're not the market leader, you need to redefine your niche in such a way that you become the market leader. You know, so if you can't be Coke, then be 7-Up, but don't be Mr. Pibb. And this is really deep. I mean, this is, you know, it's so simple, but, you know, and he wrote this brilliant book called The STAR Principle, and he and I sat down together, and we created this tool, and it's free. You can go use it. It's at starprinciple.com. It actually scores your business that you're in on a scale from 0 to 200, where anything over 100 qualifies as a STAR business. And so this applies to businesses as a whole, but it also applies to parts of your business or products in your business or niches within your market. Because, you know, most businesses, that well, there's this little niche and there's a, and we actually have these six different kind of customers. You know, this is the 80-20 of, like, where the money's actually going to show up and grow. And, you know, a lot of us have been in businesses, and we made a lot of money, and we did really well, and we thought it was because we were geniuses, and it was because the market was growing. And a lot of us have worked really hard and done a bunch of stuff, and we failed, and we thought it was because we were idiots, and it was because we were in a market that was shrinking. Well, you know, if you're going to focus your efforts somewhere, focus it somewhere where it has a very high probability of growth. And life is so much easier when you pick growth markets instead of shrinking markets, and growth niches instead of shrinking niches, and growth products instead of shrinking products. You know, and so you might go through that thing, and you might get a score of 14 and go, oh my goodness, I think I need to get in a different business. Okay, then go get in a different business. There's always ways to get out of what you're doing and into something else, you know. And, you know, and if you're like, well, I got a 75, but I could get this up to 125 if I changed a few things, then by golly, change it. You know, but don't stay stuck, and don't spend your life polishing turds, because life is too short. So that's my last. StarPrinciple.com is where the free assessment is.
StarPrinciple.com. And then, Perry, where do you want people to go to find out more about you besides Wikipedia?
Well,
where would you like them to go?
You know, if I could just give you one thing, I would say go to perrymarshall.com, and you'll see a little icon there where you can buy my 80-20 book for a penny plus shipping instead of paying full price on Amazon. It'll cost you $7 if you're in the U.S. and $14 if you're somewhere else, and that book will change your life.
That book will change your life, and I speak from my experience in reading that book, so you're correct.
Yeah, so if I could tell you to do one thing, go do that, read that book, do what Sam says, shut off your smartphone and like just sit down and read it for an hour. If we could get more people off the hamster wheel, you know, what if in my life I only managed to get 1,000 people completely off the hamster wheel and they could go do something that is burning in their heart or some passion, or they could go change the world or pursue their dream instead of just like making a living. You know, what would that be? That would be so cool. So
thank you, Perry. I really appreciate your time with us.
Sam, thank you. I'm really honored that the author of Work the System, which by the way, really changed our whole perspective. I mean, we had a team meeting this morning and your book came up again, okay? And it wasn't because you were on my calendar or anything. It came out naturally and organically. Everything that's broken is a broken system. So fix the system.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Perry. And I know you've got a call here, so go ahead and take it, and I want to talk to you one-on-one here soon, too. And,
okay, Sam.
Thanks so much. Okay.
You're on.
Catch you later.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.